Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Economics Report and American Mosaic, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome once again to the program that helps you learn and improve your American English. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Today, our subject is health. First, we'll hear about efforts to help people whose lives have been affected by violence. Then, we will meet a group of medical doctors who have found an unusual way to urge people to get their proper amount of exercise. We are happy to have you listening as we talk about our world as it is. An estimated 1 billion people have experienced mass violence, torture, or terrorism. Many of them suffer from depression, anxiety disorders, and a condition called post-traumatic stress disorder. Some are unable to work or care for themselves or their families. Now, a small American group is establishing trauma centers in poor countries. As we hear from Jonathan Evans, violence was a problem in those areas.
James Okello and Liz Alderman would never have met if not for tragedy. Mr. Okello is a psychiatrist from Uganda. He treats people with mental or emotional disorders. Ms. Alderman is from New York. Her youngest son, Peter, was killed in the 2001 attacks on New York's World Trade Center.
He did not work in the building. He was there just for a meeting, and he was 25 years old when he died. My husband and I needed to create a memorial for him, to leave a mark that he had existed, and that the world would be a better place because Peter had lived.
One night, she had the idea of bringing mental health care to people in poor countries affected by mass violence and terrorism. The first Peter C. Alderman Trauma Treatment Clinic opened in Cambodia in 2005. The clinic had so many patients that a second center was opened the following year.
People often ask us, why are you seeing patients in Cambodia? I mean, Pol Pot was, what, 30, 35 years ago? Traumatic depression doesn't go away. I mean, you see this in children of Holocaust survivors. Traumatic depression can go from one generation to the next. And unless you treat it, it's still there.
There are now 4 such clinics in Uganda. The patients include many former child soldiers and others. Some were kidnapped more than 20 years ago by the rebel Lord's Resistance Army. James Okello directs the clinic at Gulu in Uganda's north. It helps patients by providing discussions with mental health experts, group therapy, and psychopharmacology, the use of medicine to influence behavior.
If there's no form of intervention, definitely there's going to be a problem. We also sometimes talk about delayed post-traumatic stress disorder. Well, that there's usually the concept that when the guns stop firing, then the mind starts firing. So a lot of these things happen when the emergency situation is long gone.
The clinics are set up in partnership with governments in each country. The centers employ only local or native healthcare providers. These men and women understand mental disorders, both in medical terms and what they mean to local culture.
We use cultural idioms to express the same Western symptoms. So I think anybody that is not culture literate. You know, if you do not understand the certain culture, you are likely to miss a lot or to even overdiagnose depending on which tool you're using.
The American group operates a clinic in Kibera, a poor area in Nairobi, Kenya. It has also worked in Rwanda, Liberia, and Haiti. It provides financial support for a new medical publication called The African Journal of Traumatic Stress. Liz Alderman says more than 200 healthcare givers have been trained. They, in turn, have gone on to teach others. Altogether, the group has reached more than 75,000 patients.
Everyone knows physical exercise is important to staying healthy. But not everyone is exercising enough. A group of American doctors says it wants to lead by example. They formed a soccer team to represent the United States at an international football competition. The group has also developed an outreach program aimed at persuading young people to stay active. Ana Mateo has more.
On a recent weekend, 25 medical doctors from across the country traveled to Washington, D.C. to play soccer. The U.S. medical soccer team competes in the World Medical Football Championships, also called the Physicians World Cup. The championships are held in a different country each year. The tournament will be played in Brazil 2 months from now, while the official World Cup is taking place. Gautam Nayak is president of the U.S. medical soccer team.
Most of us play locally in our own leagues, but then we have to get together a few times every year to practice in preparation for the tournament. So it's a big time commitment. The tournament itself is 1 week long. That was part of why we had such a difficult time forming the organization.
Gautam Nayak is from Seattle in the northwestern state of Washington. He founded the U.S. team with a friend in 2010.
We had a soccer team in medical school, and we also were able to do some different community service projects during medical school revolving around soccer. And that really kind of gave us the motivation to form a soccer team because we felt like we can bring together a lot of people with similar interests.
Keytron works as an internal medicine doctor in California.
One of my roles is not just treating disease, but also being a cheerleader for my patients to exercise and to eat right. And a lot of times, we need that cheerleader to encourage people to make those good choices.
The U.S. medical soccer team had a busy weekend in the nation's capital. First, there was intense training as the players prepare for the trip to Brazil. The doctors also visited the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Washington, a group that provides after-school programs.
We're seeing a tremendous increase in young people becoming obese at a very, very early age and developing illnesses that are generally seen in older patients. And we're trying to encourage young people to make better choices in their food and to get more active.
Keytron says the doctors also urged the boys and girls to think about careers in medicine.
A lot of the populations that when we do our outreach program are at-risk youth. We could encourage these young people, maybe not become a physician, but also think of other possible professions in the medical field that they may never have been exposed before.
The U.S. medical soccer team is preparing for the 2015 World Medical Football Championships. That tournament will take place in California. I'm Ana Mateo.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. There are more Learning English programs just seconds away. At the beginning of each hour, we give you world news. This is VOA Washington.
The Economics Report is next, followed by American Mosaic. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. The economies of India and China could be larger than many people have thought. A new study from the World Bank now has some experts predicting that China will become the world's largest economy, by one measure, this year. The same study says that India's economy could pass Japan's as the world's third largest. To get their results, the researchers used a different way to measure the size of a nation's economy. Usually, economists measure by a country's gross domestic product, the value of all goods and services it produces. But some say a different method, called purchasing power parity, or PPP, is a better measure. It examines differences in the cost of living among nations. The report is from the International Comparison Program, which was established by the United Nations. The results are based on prices in 2011. Kamel Malahi is a professor at the University of Warwick in Britain. He says PPP provides economists with a way to compare the costs of ordinary things that people need in different countries.
You take a basket of goods, like we all buy, including milk, butter, sugar, going to the movie, price of haircut, in different countries, and they look at the cost of that in different countries.
Experts then establish a base exchange rate and use it to compare economies. The gross domestic product measure uses market-based exchange rates to compare economies. They are exchange rates paid by travelers and exporters. So the main difference between GDP and PPP is how exchange rates are computed. Greg McBride is chief financial analyst at Bankrate.com. He says PPP avoids some problems, but it is more like an estimate than a measurement.
There's a huge margin of error there that I think can really kind of throw the whole validity of the whole thing into question.
World Bank information shows that China's GDP was about $8 trillion in 2012. That was half the size of the $16 trillion U.S. economy. However, Professor Malahi says the GDP measurement underestimates developing economies.
People always said it underestimates the size of economies, developing countries and some of the emerging economies.
The economies of China and India continue to grow at rates higher than most developed economies. However, China and India rate far below other large economies when their economies are compared with their populations. And that's the Economics Report from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter.
Welcome to American Mosaic from VOA Learning English. June Sims. Today on the show, we listen to some new recordings by two singer-songwriters. We also look at the expanding links between the museum world and Hollywood. But first, we tell about some unusual young people who work to make a difference in the world. Most teenagers in the United States spend their time trying to make time for school, family, and friends. But some choose bigger goals. Christopher Cruz tells us about three American teens working to make a difference in the world.
At age 15, Winter Vinecki has already had more successes than most people have in their lifetime.
I recently completed a marathon on all seven continents and became the youngest person in the world to do so. And I really was doing this for my dad.
Doctors discovered Winter's father had a rare and aggressive form of prostate cancer when she was 9 years old. He died 10 months later.
When he was first diagnosed, I immediately knew I had to do something to help him. That's when I formed Team Winter for prostate cancer research and awareness.
Through Team Winter and social media, Winter Vinecki has raised almost $500,000. She has taken prostate cancer education worldwide, from Kenya to Mongolia, through foot races called marathons on seven continents. In the United States, she travels continually to talk about prostate cancer and urge others to act. Winter Vinecki spoke recently at a conference in Los Angeles, California. She was one of several teenagers who spoke about young people who are living extraordinary lives.
So prostate cancer is much more common, but the men don't want to talk about it. So that's why a 9-year-old girl had to go out there and start talking about it for them.
Another speaker was Jack Andreka. He invented an inexpensive sensor that identifies cancers of the pancreas, ovaries, and lungs. He was 15 at the time.
Without Google and Wikipedia, I would have never been able to learn all the stuff I needed for this project. I mean, I didn't even know what pancreas was before developing my test for pancreatic cancer.
Jack is now 17 and seeking patents for his latest inventions. He has developed low-cost water quality devices. They help identify and remove heavy metals and poisonous chemicals from water.
I hope to see them employed in the developing nations such as Bangladesh and parts of China and India, especially as well as in parts of Africa, where these heavy metal and pesticide and other industrial effluents are a major problem.
16-year-old Mary Pat Hector saw a problem in her own community. She says too many young people were dying in gun violence.
It was seeing my friends hurt. It was seeing it on the television constantly. It kind of made me feel like I had to do something about it.
So Mary Pat became the national youth director of one of the largest U.S. civil rights organizations, the National Action Network. She also started a campaign to educate young people about gun violence.
My 8-year-old brother drives me. I think about how innocent he is, and I just want the world to be a better place for him and my children.
Mary Pat Hector, Jack Andreka, and Winter Vinecki say a combination of supportive parents, the internet, and social media has helped them succeed. But Winter and Jack also credit their inner selves.
I think the biggest thing for kids and adults is to never let age and gender be a barrier, and to not just dream, but to dream big.
Never let anyone else tell you no. Always keep going for your dream and think if a 15-year-old could do it, just think what you could do.
They say with that kind of thinking, anything is possible.
For years, objects used in movies and those celebrated in popular culture have made appealing museum exhibits. The famed jeweled shoes or ruby slippers from the film The Wizard of Oz are an example. The shoes attract many visitors to the Smithsonian National Museum of American History in Washington. A model of the imaginary spacecraft USS Enterprise from the television series Star Trek hung for years at the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum in the same city. But some museums are taking another step. Museums are now developing exhibits centered on movies based on real events. Like the Oscar-winning movie Argo. The 2012 film was based on a secret U.S. intelligence operation. Central Intelligence agent Tony Mendez led the action that rescued six American diplomats from Iran in 1980. The International Spy Museum in Washington has made Argo the subject of an exhibit. Visitors can look at real photos and documents about the operation. Jason Worden is the museum's public relations manager.
Tony and Jonna Mendez both are founding members of the International Spy Museum and brought their expertise in their history of the CIA to tell this story of Argo from the real case that occurred in 1979-1980.
Another film-related exhibit at the museum is called Exquisitely Evil, 50 Years of Bond's Villains. It explores the imaginary enemies of Hollywood's most famous fictional spy. Television is also represented at the Spy Museum. The Americans is a spy show set in the 1980s. The museum exhibit identifies some of the truths within the fiction. The Newseum is another museum that includes a little Hollywood action among its exhibits. One popular exhibit features the 2004 humor film Anchorman. Actor Will Ferrell plays a news announcer in the 1970s at a television station in San Diego, California. The character, Ron Burgundy, is always clashing with a female announcer at the station. The exhibit caught the attention of museum visitor Jim Mulvaney.
I'm surprised they went to so much detail and kept so many props, you know. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it. Bring back a lot of the funny moments from the film for me.
Newseum official Jonathan Thompson says visitors see both the light and more serious sides of the news business.
Women in the newsroom were discriminated against, and in the past 30 to 40 years, women in the newsroom have come a long way. And that's one of the serious stories that we tell in this exhibit, in addition to, of course, the lighthearted, humorous moments.
Maggie Stogner is a professor of film and arts at American University in Washington. She says popular entertainment and museum exhibits are a good combination.
I really do think it gives Hollywood another opportunity to take the material that they create, often wonderful material, into new venues, to be experienced by new audiences that wouldn't necessarily experience it.
St. Vincent is an American singer-songwriter. So is Ray LaMontagne. Today, we listen to their latest albums and find out more about who they are. Marcia James reports.
St. Vincent was not born St. Vincent. Her real name is Annie Clark, and she comes from the state of Oklahoma. She currently lives in New York City. Recently, she released her fourth album, called St. Vincent. Annie Clark told a reporter that the new album is very unselfconscious, a little lighter than her past records. She described it as a party record you could play at a funeral. She starts St. Vincent off with Rattlesnake.
Follow the power lines back from the road. No one around, so I take off my clothes. Am I the only one in the only world?
LaMontagne released Supernova, his fifth studio album, last month. The 40-year-old was born in Maine and now lives in the nearby state of Massachusetts. Critics and fans alike have noted a new, different sound for LaMontagne on this album. There is a quality of the psychedelic like one might find on a Pink Floyd record. Ray LaMontagne told Rolling Stone magazine that he just let the songs happen. Julia was one of the results.
Julia, we're so glad you found the time. We're so glad you found the time. Cause it ain't easy. Julia, let's so
Vincent plans on performing at some shows in the upcoming Black Keys concert series. Here is the bouncy Regret from St. Vincent.
Morning, bright windows open, let in, what's so terrifying? Summer is as faded as a long cicada call. Memories so bright, I got squint just to recall. Regret the words I've bitten.
We leave you with Ray LaMontagne performing the title song from his new album, Supernova.
So you and me, we've been hanging out now, ever since we were kids, just kicking around this town. So you know me and I don't back down, I know what I want, I think I found it. I want you.
June Sims. Our program was written and produced by Katie Weaver. Join us again next week for American Mosaic from VOA Learning English.
Ain't no use.